I've had the privilege of being at this conference several times over the last few years. I run ABC Radio. Spoken word is what we do primarily. We transitioned our business January 1st, so even though news is the core product we create other non-news content, and we're engaged right now in an effort to try and extend all of the Walt Disney Company brands to audio. So this has been a very interesting few months for me as we've sort of battled in this space to a degree we never have had previously. And I think you'll find from our panelists, they have a range of backgrounds, and they come from multiple time zones. This may be the one panel that covers more time zones than any panel today you will find at RAIN. So the man who's traveled the farthest is Kurt Edwards. Kurt is the International Commercial Director of TalkSport UK. TalkSport UK describes itself as the world's biggest sports radio station with play-by-play rights for multiple Premier League brands and also a 24/7 broadcast operation that's available on all platforms. Ted Gurley. Ted, there's Ted. Hello, Ted. Ted's VP Digital Sales of Univision. Ted's Vice President for Univision Radio, a division of the leading media company we all know when it comes to Hispanics, Univision Communications. And Univision Radio is a leading Spanish-language radio broadcaster in the United States. They have 68 stations in key markets across the country, and Ted oversees the digital sales and operations. Jay Green, hello, Jay, good morning. Jay is VP of Digital Sales and Content Partnerships for AdLarge. He's based in New York. Jay joined AdLarge last year to lead the company's continued expansion into digital audio advertising sales representation. And prior to that, Jay was National Account Director at Podcast One. So he's a recent ad, but not the most recent job changer on our panel. That would be Beth Murphy. So, Beth, you're only in your position a few months. Beth is CMO at Deezer. Deezer has been around a while, but made a big play as far as spoken word goes last year when they acquired Stitcher. So we want to hear a little about that. And very interestingly, I think, Beth came from Zinio. So she has a unique perspective, perhaps, on content that would seem to translate well to spoken word, and I'd love to talk a little about that. But I thought we'd start by having our panelists first describe the types of spoken word programming they currently create for their businesses or they distribute, because not everyone up here is a content creator. They may be a distributor, they may be a seller, and I'd like you also to differentiate whether it's connected, on demand, or a little of the two. So, Kurt, can you start us off?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much. Yes, so TalkSport is a sports broadcaster at heart. We are 24/7 sport, but we're also the exclusive global audio partner of the Barclays Premier League Soccer. So we broadcast live play-by-play commentary of Premier League Soccer matches to 87 countries around the world in 10 different languages. So all of our content is available across connected devices. So in the UK, it's wherever our sort of users, listeners want our content, they can find it from apps, mobile optimized websites, from DAB, which is similar to your HD radio, and AM frequency. Internationally, we work with many distribution partners. So for example, in the States, we work with Westwood One, Sirius, and TuneIn. And across many other markets in India, Asia, Middle East, we work with various mobile distribution partners invariably through their apps. So, yes, we are huge supporters of the talk format. Recently, we have just won the right to launch 3 new national digital talk radio stations in the UK by March of next year. So one of those, for example, is Talk Business. So we are going into partnership with Bloomberg to launch a business radio station in the UK. So we are big, passionate believers of talk. We believe it's the future.
And is that why Mike Bloomberg was recently received the Distinguished Cross, or what was his honor?
We are grateful for his contribution
there's
to the country.
Something here. There's a connection here we'll have to get to. Jay, can you tell us about AdLarge Media?
Sure. Thank you. AdLarge Media is a third-party representative with exclusive partnerships with different podcasts and spoken word, such as MRN and all of NASCAR races and play-by-play. Our partners with Anthony Cumia, so entertainment and comedy has been a big piece for us. Sports, such as we mentioned, NASCAR, Yahoo Sports, and now RotoWire, because we're seeing fantasy sports is also growing big in the on-demand viability. Entertainment such as Slate and Panoply, and different pieces that we've come up with the news as well.
And your company also handles broadcasts. So you have a foot in each.
Correct, and to use the buzzword of like everybody else, you know, it's become very, very synergistic for us.
Yep. Ted, tell us about Univision.
Sure. We have 17 local markets where we have 68 radio stations that we monetize across the U.S. in the digital space. I'm going to focus in this discussion primarily on what we do in Miami. It's one of my more interesting markets because we have WAQI AM and WQBA, sounds like Cuba, also an AM. As an aggregate, they out-deliver any other AM station in the marketplace, and they have a unique value proposition, especially in the digital stream. We do have unique stations in the spoken word in Puerto Rico that live stream their studios every day, so it's an important part of our business.
So, Beth, I'm just going to go right to you with a question. So Deezer bought Stitcher just a few months ago. I believe Stitcher has about 35,000 content relationships and about 1 million subscribers. What was the reason that Deezer bought Stitcher?
Well, we see a symbiotic relationship with music as well as talk consumption. And I think one of the things that we see the future of on-demand is the same way that music can algorithmically or curationally create a lean-back experience. We also think we can take on-demand talk and entertainment and create those similar experiences using algorithms and curated clips.
And so have you had, I know you're new on the job there, but what have you seen as far as the lift in just across the board in spoken word content?
I mean, generally we've seen the space grow at least 2 to 3 times itself every year. As a sort of like a CAGR. With the launch of Serial, we saw like a 20% bump in just new users to the category. So I think that's definitely was sort of an iconic episode. In terms of revenues, we're at the highest amount of revenues we've seen in the category. We don't have enough inventory, in fact, and we're enjoying really high CPMs, as much as $50 for something that's really native and targeted.
So you mentioned Serial, and already it's been mentioned a couple of times today. So we've all heard of it, you know, the fastest podcast to hit 5 million downloads. An incredible story, and probably, you know, one reason why we're having this panel today. Yet, how many of you content creators or salespeople or executives, if you were pitched a concept to do a serialized podcast about a guy who killed a teenage girl, you know, 15 years ago and was convicted, and you needed to commit the resources and the expenses over nearly a year to do that, would you actually do that? I mean, one of the things people have asked about Serial is, what's the secret sauce? How do you replicate it? So since you brought up Serial, and we'll go back, we'll start with you, Beth, but if we can just go back across the panel. And please, again, raise your hand, grab a mic, shout if there's no mic. And we'd like the panelists to interact with one another. But what is the Serial impact?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, we saw a big increase in new users. But I think, more importantly, it sort of, I think, highlights, and I think I've always been saying this because prior to Deezer and prior to Zinio, I was also at Stitcher, I think the big growth of on-demand is having more broad lean back entertainment. And I think right now the category has some great production in news and public radio. And so I think it highlights that when you bring great content, people will consume it. So I think it signals to content providers that there's this amazing opportunity to create new content for the category.
And I agree with you there. And what, for me at least, Serial has done is it brought podcasting and spoken word on demand into the mindsets of people who might not otherwise have been listening to podcasts or known about it. So it's really kind of given it that hockey stick growth, maybe a little bit quicker than we all thought, to be able to get people into content that they might not have seen before.
And Kurt, Serial was a late entrant into the UK. But it's there.
Yeah, no, absolutely fantastic, the awareness it's raised. But coming to the earlier panel, would it have had its success if it hadn't been for social media? So if social media hadn't supported the product and raised awareness and created word of mouth around it, would it have been so successful? What we don't know, however, is how many people have actually listened to it. They might have downloaded it, but how many people have actually listened to it?
Right. Well, we need to come back to measurement and monetization of podcasts. But since you mentioned social, and then I want to jump over, Ted, to you and reframe Serial a little differently for you. But you mentioned social. What is the what are the requirements for all of your content as far as the social footprint that you must have in addition to audio before you launch a new product? So you're launching three new spoken word products. What's the social component with those? For you, yes.
Social media is going to be absolutely key. So they will have a digital footprint. The opportunity to allow listeners to engage with that station is very real. The format within a sports radio station and digital stations has changed very much. Gone are the days of our broadcasters or talent sitting there with newspapers trying to create stories. They're sitting there with Twitter feeds in front of them, and that creates the debate and the news stories of the day. So it's a rolling agenda. It's driven by social media, so it's absolutely fundamental to the programming aspect of a station.
So speaking of news stories of the day, Ted, you can answer about Serial, but I wanted to reframe it a little if you think this is appropriate. Beth had mentioned what is driving consumption is unique perspective and some sort of exclusive content. And yesterday, I was thinking of you, Ted, when I saw Obama and Raul Castro as they begin the rapprochement between Cuba and the U.S. and thought, if there's one company that has expertise and insight and a connection with the Hispanic community in the U.S. that will over-index in interest, but there's broad interest in the Cuba-U.S. story, it would be you guys. So when you see that, what is the business opportunity?
So I'm going to hit on a couple of different topics, and I'll start with the Serial, and I'll bounce into your topic. The Serial example is just a tremendous example. I was a big fan of NPR and This American Life, so it was very natural for me to jump into that. In the digital space, we at Univision perceive our audio digital experience as kind of a playground. It lets us do formats that we can't really invest in over the air. So we have considered formats such as a kids' story time where stories are read in Spanish, also in English, to small children during drive time. So that digital space is a great sandbox for us to experiment with, play with. To your question about the political elements, politics are huge, and especially in Miami with the Cuban base that we have there. It's really driven the exclusive listeners in our digital space to a really high level. We're getting 8% exclusive listeners from our 200,000 total CUM within the digital devices in the geo of Miami. So we have people only consuming on their iPhones, Androids, and other devices. To your point, we have taken town halls, we've taken localized debates in San Antonio, localized debates in Miami, New York, Los Angeles, forums regarding immigration, and we have placed that back in a downloadable, podcastable nugget that can be consumed at the individual's schedule as it permits, or they can share it with others and share it with friends. So in our space, dealing with that digital Hispanic, yes, that is important.
So are you seeing the relationship between broadcast listening and digital listening, is it complementary or is there cannibalization?
Well, I think whenever I mentioned the exclusive listener and the unique listener in the digital space, it has lifted our overall cum of those two AM stations. So it's a 1+1=3 instead of 1+1 = the same.
How many folks in here are content creators? Can you raise your hand if you create content? So you may be interested in what's really popping. So Beth, can you tell us spoken words? So news, comedy, sports, personality. Do you have any insights on what people are consuming as a category?
Well, I think the most interesting thing is we introduced sort of the concept of a front page on Stitcher, and so there's short little clips. There's anywhere from 10 to 20 a day, and what we found is that for current listeners, they added that content to their regular playlist. And for new users, it was a great way, just an introduction to the category. So I'd say the biggest trend or theme are sort of short, snackable, digestible content is where we're seeing the most growth in just incremental listening. And I would say generally the whole category of entertainment, I think, has seen the most number of like new content providers. So that's also a space where I think we'll continue to see more growth.
Can I say in the UK, we are, say, traditional broadcasting. The content areas of comedy, technology, and business are traditionally underserved, but those categories are what's driving a lot of the podcast listening in the UK. So companies that are offering that type of content in on-demand are seeing success. So that's why we felt it's given us the confidence to launch radio stations built around those content genres.
So as far as live consumption of an event occurring, whether it's a news event or sports or on-demand, can you talk a little about that? I'm curious about the Bloomberg product potentially will offer perspective as opposed to breaking news, perhaps. But you know, you mentioned to me that every Saturday at, is it 2 p.m.?
3 p.m.
3 p.m. 3 p.m. every Saturday. Do not call this man. He will be busy. Will you be busy?
So 3 p.m. in the UK is a traditional kickoff time for soccer. But interesting, this morning, one of the biggest games in Premier League football, Manchester United versus Manchester City, kicked off at 8 a.m. this morning. And we were the number one trending station globally on TuneIn as a platform. So live events is driven our sports programming. And from a digital consumption point of view, the shape of our listening has changed. People are engaging with us on digital platforms to fulfill a need, be it coming to work, in the gym, but more importantly, it's about capturing that live event wherever they are, whenever they can.
Anyone have perspectives on live versus on-demand events that are perhaps even perishable?
Okay. Well, it works great, right? When you look at NASCAR, you have the ability to listen to on a NASCAR app or an MRN app, whatever it might be, because now instead of just driving and you're like, oh, I'm going to shut off the race, now, again, just like Kurt said, you shove your phone in your pocket and you walk into the gym or you walk into the supermarket or you're taking the kids to school, whatever it might be. So now you have that listening complete, always on the go. And with regards to sports talk, it's kind of the same, right? Where you asked about cannibalization. Someone might not be able to hear that show from 1 to 3 because they're at work, but they still want to hear the show. So what they're going to do now is they're going to, okay, my show is now, I can listen to it on demand, whether it's Yahoo Sports, whether it's Dan Patrick, whatever that might be. So now you're not cannibalizing your audience. I think you're actually growing your audience to people who might not have otherwise been able to hear that show.
You mentioned the social elements, and social elements in the Hispanic target that we're dealing with is 2 to 3 times more important than the English language social interaction. Those social interactions on Twitter, on Facebook, are driving individuals back to that programming, and then it's creating a conversation about whether it's a soccer match or whether it's breaking news or important news such as that debate within the community. So there's a symbiotic relationship between everything that we do, whether it's in the sports segments that we're doing about the Gold Cup or about the World Cup. In our pages, on our digital pages, we're putting in countdown clocks to say, hey, tune in here to listen to these updates. We're creating special stations that may cover the Gold Cup or the World Cup and have special commentary and sports discussion, and then we extend that into that social space. So we're creating a symbiotic relationship between everything from mobile to desktop to radio to the digital audio channel.
You know, that is interesting, the ability to cross-promote and to drive your listeners. So with Stitcher and Deezer, you're not necessarily producing the content, and you don't have that opportunity. So how are you able to organize or drive recommendation, whether you mentioned playlist selection, and as part of the answer, just Zinio. I mean, I'm presuming that you perceive that as a relatively elegant and effective way to showcase magazines. Is there an audio corollary right now that showcases content and provides recommendation and highlights, surfaces it to people who've already demonstrated an interest in a specific type of content?
Yeah, so Stitcher launched the smart recommendation engine. So, and I think what we saw was that for new users, they would discover on average 5 shows through it. So the algorithms can work. So it was a good sort of early test positive. So we think that there's a lot of opportunity to get those to work better. I think in terms of sourcing new content, we've always, Stitcher traditionally, and now that we're Deezer and we're bigger, we're very interested in working with content partners to help develop new sources of content. We have had little fits and spurts where we've also developed our own content to test it. So we really do feel like there's an opportunity to work with different brands. And again, we don't really want to be that person. So working with other sort of third-party providers that can bring a lot of bigger brands and magazines, because I think a lot of those brands are starting to come into the category, you're seeing more development in terms of what they're offering, and I think that trend will continue as they validate that they can get reach and develop their brand in via spoken word.
Anyone have any questions? Okay.
Can I just add to that? Ultimately, it doesn't matter how much you invest in technology to help the content surface to the top and make it easy to find. It's always the best content that is found. You know, and what we find from a lot of our international partners is that they spend a lot of money on digital platforms trying to get their content out there, and sometimes actually what they need to do is just spend more of their money on content. And when they produce really good content, it creates word of mouth and people find it for themselves because their people are being recommended it and so on. So ultimately, the best content always comes to the top.
So on that point, Kurt, and again, talking about cereal. So the difference between serialized content, where you're leading the listener down a journey that has a conclusion, versus something that stands alone, and the type of experience that listeners have with spoken word content. If any of you have a thought or comment about this, and specifically, I'm wondering, when you're in the vehicle and you're choosing not to listen to music, but you're choosing to engage in the storytelling, how does that inform the type of content you're producing, and do you have any insights on the type of environment? So, does somebody who's exercising and listening to your content, is that going to be different, do you think, than somebody who's in the car listening and is really focused on what they're hearing, as opposed to perhaps trying to, break a sweat or something? Anyone want to take that?
We've definitely done research on where people so we know that 20% exercise while they're listening to podcasting, and I think and it's 40% to 60% in the car. And we've asked a lot about behaviors, not necessarily content. But what we found interesting in one-on-ones is that people are actually listening when they're working out, are listening to pretty involved, lean forward experiences. So I don't know if there is a trend between what they're choosing. I think surprisingly, a lot of people are listening to very intricate commentary while they're doing other things.
So in our case, about 25% of our digital audience is in common with our radio listeners. And what we hear from those listeners, because they are, to use the term, lean forward type listeners who are involved in politics and discussions on Cuba and immigration and opening up the borders and discussion with Cuba, they're taking it with them. So for us, it is a brand extension, but it's a delivery mechanism as well.
Hi.
Yes.
Well, it's kind of an observation and to get the response of the panel. I think for a lot of the guys, it may be good to make the distinction between what people think as a podcast, because certainly in Audio Boom, we look at a podcast and podcast equals iTunes, and you're building somebody else's business. And as to Kurt's point, it's a download, and podcasting, the commercial's been built on native in-read advertising to a download. You have no clue who listened to that content. From a commercial point of view, actually, it's worthless. And I just wonder if podcasting is really going to drive forward, everybody needs to concentrate on streaming and live on-demand delivery of that, not to download through iTunes. And then it's pre and post-roll, and it's the native advertising you can put with that, not just the in-read, because actually there is no future in in-read advertising because it's non-interactive, it's not digital.
Right. So you've sharpened the argument, sir. Thank you very much. In a little more than 24 hours from now, in a room somewhere nearby, the IAB Audio Committee will be gathering to try and discuss how they're figuring out new ways to better monetize podcasting. Jay Green, what time are you guys going to have that answer? Should we see? Will there be white smoke tomorrow from the building?
3 o'clock. Look for the white smoke. It'll be good. It's really a great question. And so to Rob's point, podcasting is no longer just two guys in the garage talking about a set of drums and someone's going to take their iPod and they're going to plug it into iTunes. Now, because of everybody's got their phones in their pockets right now, you're dynamically listening to it. And what's been great about podcasting is technology has finally caught up, and that's where we're seeing marketers as well, with the ability to do geo-targeting and date and time specificity, and of course third-party tracking, whether it's Dart or whether it's WMX, whatever that might be. Now we have the ability to get a little bit more granular of where we need to go. The problem is definitely still if somebody downloads it. You don't know. We'll be honest. You don't know if they've listened to it. You don't know how long they've listened to. So we need to get beyond that. We need to know. We have partners in the pharmaceutical range, in the retail range, who they don't want to be downloaded. Because they do have their promotionals. And you talk about the DVR aspect. Plus 3, +7, +11 for TV. The same can kind of be said for podcasting as well. But the problem still remains that. Okay, I don't want to be downloaded, so where do we go from there? Is it a matter of creating two different shows that one, when somebody listens to a stream, they do get a pharmaceutical ad, and if they download it, they don't. So, you still want to keep the content remaining the same, but the technology still has to catch up. With that said, as you mentioned, we are working with the IAB, and there's a lot of major players and from platforms to aggregators to individual podcasts themselves that are working with the IAB, because it has been realized that we need to come together, and not everybody has the same form of measurement. Everybody has their different servers and their proprietary technology, but the story still has to remain the same. What do we tell the marketers? What do we tell the brands? And that's what the IAB and the subgroup for podcasting is working on together, so that even though we might not all be measuring the same, the story remains the same. And I think that really is what becomes what we have to tell.
Yeah, this is a meaty issue. So this is a core business problem that has to be remedied, really, to allow all of us to have the boats that were mentioned earlier that the radio disc jockey was bragging about. So, Kurt, I know you're on the IAB in the UK.
I wish there was an easy answer. There isn't. But it's something that the whole industry needs to get together and act upon quickly, because if you want to be taken seriously, you've got to have the data behind you and you've got to be able to justify that investment to advertisers. I was just going to go and give another example about podcasting. It's not always about the streaming. We have a Sunday night show on TalkSport called My Sporting Life, where we do a two-hour show, a two-hour interview with sports personalities. We cut that down, edit it to a 70-minute podcast. But we thought, why does it need to be a podcast? We called it an audio book instead, and we sold it to Audible. So this is content. It doesn't always just have to be a podcast. So we created it. It was exactly the same content, just positioned it differently, and we made money from another place.
I thought actually that was a great idea that Kurt executed on. So basically, they did all of these interviews on broadcast radio, and then they realized they had a bounty of recognized personalities saying interesting things that consumers had previously indicated they were interested in. So they turned these interviews into audiobooks. And, what a great idea, and to use Audible.
So Ted? From our perspective, we use those snackable pieces, the content pieces, really as audience connection points. And it kind of goes old school, but we're not monetizing each and every download or each and every listen. We're having a branded extension with a advertiser as a sponsor. It may be a beer distributor, maybe something in retail, that extends that relationship from what he's doing in the digital space, whether it's on our mobile app or even with broadcast, and it's done at a fixed cost, so we're not being held necessarily accountable to those metrics for that snackable content. It becomes a conceptual sell.
And I think the one thing I'll add from Stitcher is we do know if the ad is served, I think, which helps with our CPMs. So I think it's only good for the category if we can actually provide tracking. We also provide that to content providers. They know exactly how many people listen to their streams, when do they quit. So we do have the data. It's possible to have tracking. I just think the question is, how do we productize it and move the industry forward?
So as there is this discussion that will occur later on today here about the royalties and the amount of money that goes to artists, ironically, there are battles we read about now with Tidal talking about giving more money to artists and Beats and Apple wanting to give more money to get exclusivity. And I'm wondering, Beth, so you guys, Deezer, a tremendous global music company that has gobbled up this spoken word entity, Stitcher, how do you integrate the spoken word listeners and the music listeners? Do you see it as being a shared listener that you're going to have in a year, or how are you driving the two to cross-promote?
Well, we as sort of Deezer looks at the music category, because there's lots of different competitors, we're really looking at how do you super serve underserved segments, right? So a good example would be we just bought Cricket from AT&T, where you just bought Move Music from AT&T, which is largely Hispanic and urban listeners. And so what we'll sort of approach from a talk perspective is, how do we create just really great music and media and talk experiences for that vertical, for example? Or we launched Deezer Elite, which is high resolution audio, and we see that those listeners tend to sort of own their audiophiles, they own high-end systems. So the question there is, how do we create a content stream around those segments? So instead of kind of this one-size-fits-all, we're really going to look at different segments and creating great media experiences around both talk as well as music.
Can you talk a little about the different demographic between the music consumer and the spoken word listener?
Yeah, I mean, Stitcher definitely today has a very kind of very attractive demographic to a lot of advertisers. They're professional, they have high household income. Psychographically, they're early adopter and they're trying new products. The music audience, again, Deezer's in 182 countries, so we have a very diverse demographic that, when you look at it in aggregate, looks like still like a music streaming consumer that's still an early adopter, tends to be a little bit more educated and affluent than maybe someone who's listening on terrestrial. But because the category itself is still, in terms of paying users, only 40 million. But I think as you see that category expand, you'll see it look like the rest of the demographic. And I think some of the challenges will be how do we move from a lean forward space, which is what podcasting and even the Spotify's of the world create, versus more lean back experiences, which is what you see in terrestrial radio as well as Pandora and these other sources that actually have more listeners.
In the talk space, we tend to have a 2 to 3x of time spent on each program. We don't have as much turnover in the audience.
On a related point, I wanted to ask you, Ted, everybody here wants, does anybody want millennials to be consuming their content? I imagine a few people do. And as we cast into the future, a significant percentage of millennials are going to be English-speaking Hispanics. And so if you want to reach them, I would think Univision is probably a good partner to have or place to work. So what can you tell us about culturally connected Hispanics, second-generation Hispanics who are going to be driving consumption of consumer products and who we need to get as listeners?
So even though we're focusing on talk, I'll jump around and try and address that a little bit. What we have seen in the Spanish language space is we have seen that millennial come back to that native family language as something they consume, even though they may be bilingual. We're seeing a lot of jumping around between English language stations that we put out there targeted to millennial Hispanics to a traditional regional Mexican station that their parents may listen to. So we do see that individual consuming in small pieces from multiple products. So we have to have these specialized stations that we produce. It may be a dance mix, it may be a cumbia mix. It is formats, as I said earlier, that we can't support over the air. So it's always trying to listen to that audience and have a product that really plays to what they're into at the time. With the Latin Grammys and special awards shows, we have done a audio as well as a video stream of backstage at those award events. And they are bilingual, very fluid between Spanish and English. And as you know, that Spanish in LA is completely different than the Spanish in New York. So for each one of these events, we tend to tailor some of that content specifically to the geos that we're trying to impact.
So as we want to pursue millennials as listeners, I know where you can find a lot of millennials engaged in our business. They tend to be at the agencies buying or not buying the content that we're trying to provide to them. So, Jay, you walk into an agency, and the people that are going to decide whether or not to spend money on your spoken word or other audio product tend to be 25, 26, and they probably don't listen to a lot of spoken word. Or maybe they do. What do you find?
You know, if you'd come a year and a half ago, I'd say you're right. But now it really has boomed. And you look at kind of what Audio Boom is doing, what Deezer is doing with the ability to make it social. You know, you have your podcast and your spoken word on demand, and now that they have the ability to share it, I mean, you look at what the millennials are doing with Instagram and Twitter and WhatsApp and everything that's going on there. Now they're not just listening. Now they're sharing it with their friends. They're saying, "Look what I can do." And some of these platforms even have tools to record your own. And so it's not now they're involved with it. They're integrating with it. And so when you go and you talk to these 25, 26 year old buyers and planners at the agencies, now it is starting to click. When you say, "I've got a podcast," or "I've got on demand," "Oh, have you heard of X?" And of course, the first one that pops up is Serial. Or you know, they might say, "Oh, my favorite host does this one," or "I happen to listen. I'm into new. You know, I'm trying to create a new business, and I'm an entrepreneur." So it doesn't always also have to be these large shows, right? Podcasting, what's been great about it is the ability to create these verticals, whether it's small business, whether it's health and wellness, and that's where the light bulb goes off for them. Now they have the ability to give something new to the brand and their client that they haven't been able to do before.
Well, we're 4 minutes away from the end and a break, sponsored by, I believe, Triton Media. John Russell makes a mean cup of coffee if he's in here. Mm-hmm. So, Kurt, you sit across the ocean running the largest sports radio station in the world, and you've got the total attention of the United Kingdom at 3 p.m. on Saturdays, and you come here to Las Vegas. What is it we should be doing, American media producers in this space? Is there, based on what you've seen, heard, your understanding, I know you're very plugged in, is there any recommendation, is there anything you think either we should be doing, or there are a couple of successes, and then I'd like everybody to share their successes. Are there a couple of successes that you think are just worthy of best practice that others should be following right now today?
I don't think I'd be so bold to tell you what to do. What I would say is our learnings have been very steep internationally. So if you take a market like Saudi Arabia, for example, mobile penetration sits at 250% in a market like that. But 90% are prepay. So the data costs are very close to people. You know, they're still quite prohibitive in terms of people listening to content on a mobile device. So just what works in more mature markets like this absolutely doesn't work in many emerging markets, and we've learned that very quickly. And genuinely, consumer behavior around listening to audio on a mobile device is catching up in other markets very quickly. So, just because it works in the UK, Australia, and the United States and Canada, there's more mature markets. It's very, very different in a lot of Asia and Africa and Middle East.
Excellent insight. Jay?
One of the biggest successes we've had, and there have been multiple, is the native integration back to the buzzword. We had because there is no station clock, you're not bound by time constraints on a podcast, we had a 60-second live read turn into a 19-minute segment just because the host and his guest were having so much fun with the product on the show. And, you know, that ended up being going from a 4-minute commitment and a 35-week commitment. So it shows that podcasting works.
Ted?
So as a broadcaster who made a very intentional decision not to simulcast our streams, the thing I love most is the ability to do what I got into this business to do 25 years ago, connect with the audience. And to see a school board candidate, a city council person who can't afford our $500 broadcast ad unit but can afford $75 for a campaign, and that $75 spot that he runs five times a week does work for that candidate, and then he's working with us in email, in other spaces. So we're seeing this as a point of entry to what broadcast is supposed to be about. So that's what I love about this.
Beth, you have you're only 6 months into this, but you have a wealth of experience. What should we be doing differently, or what is the one thing you've seen in the last 6 months at Deezer with Stitcher that you think has amazed you and delighted you?
Well, I think I'll have two best practices, maybe not amazing, but one is data. So our best partners are super data-driven. They're always asking us how they can make their content more relevant. So they're really using that data to influence their programming. And secondly, I think the most exciting thing is we're starting to see more brands that weren't traditionally creating podcast content come into the category. And it's really exciting, and their content's doing really well. And so we're excited about that, and we encourage more brands and media companies to explore the venue, the medium, because we think it's really effective.
Excellent. Jennifer, I think we're at 10:55. Where are we? We're good. We're done. Thank you very much, everyone.